Good evening, and welcome to the St. Petersburg by Night Podcasting Network. Tonight, we present to you our behind-the-scenes show, After Dark. To the St. Pete by Night Twitch stream, where we play St. Petersburg by Night, a massive multiplayer 5th edition World of Darkness Chronicle set in St. Petersburg, Florida. I am your host. My name is Kent, also known as Mishakent on all social media. I am the lead storyteller of St. Pete by Night, but tonight I'm just playing the role of host, as this is After Dark. This is the behind-the-scenes show where we talk about what's behind the curtain of St. Pete by Night. We talk to storytellers, we talk to players, we talk to movers and shakers within the World of Darkness, and we just talk about this game that has become the all-consuming force of most of our lives, not just the St. Pete setting, but the World of Darkness in general. Tonight, I'm super excited. I have a very, very special guest, one of our newest storytellers to join the St. Pete by Night team, but a player since day one. I'm talking, of course, about the one and only Tyler the Nerd, who you can find over on TikTok at Tyler_the_nerd with a 3 instead of an E. He's a longtime member of the D&D TikTok community. He's a mover and shaker. He's a cosplayer. I think we're going to have plenty to talk about. So go ahead and say hi, Tyler.
Hi. How are you doing, Kent?
I'm wonderful, as always, but I'm even more wonderful because I'm getting to talk to you tonight about so many things about you, about how you got into the World of Darkness, how you got into TTRPGs, how you even joined TikTok. We're going to try and cover as many of the bases as we possibly can. So let's start at the very, 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 very beginning. Why don't you tell me how you got introduced to the concept of TTRPGs? When did you first discover Dungeons & Dragons or any other tabletop role-playing games?
So there's a couple weird moments. I think I was at a bookstore, Borders or Barnes & Noble, and I found a little book that was describing how to cast spells. I've been 3.5, 4th edition. Okay. Didn't really know too much about it. My friends and I played Besom, B-E-S-M, Big Eyes, Small Mouth, in high school for like an anime game.
So yeah, I can't say I'd heard of it.
Yeah, it's a very obscure one, create your own anime. You had 3 stats and you rolled 2 dice, and it was better to roll low than high.
So
exactly how it works, but
approximately when, like, year-wise was it when you really started to dive in? You said you found it at Barnes & Noble. When approximately was that?
That one I didn't really pick up, but when I started playing with my friends around, like, 1999.
Okay.
Was when I started. So.
Hard to believe it's almost been 25 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the question that I'm always excited to ask people, especially, what was the first character class you played in D&D?
The first character class I played in D&D was probably my favorite, which is Rogue.
Rogue.
I usually like playing the sneaky, stabby type of characters, so that was really fun. I played a thief in Bism, and then I played a thief in D&D.
I've kind of always gotten that vibe from you, too, that you like to kind of be somewhat mischievous, somewhat a little bit devious, but also you've got this, like, quiet composure that makes you perfect for, like, blending into a crowd or, like, observing from the sidelines, but meanwhile taking notes and, like, keeping track of all of the details of what's going on and what you're observing. So Rogue totally makes sense. I wish I could say I started as a rogue, but I started as a fighter. I didn't discover a rogue until much later on when I fell in love with it. So yeah, day one rogue. Okay. So what made you join TikTok? Was it D&D related? Was it just kind of looking for something? And when did you kind of get into that community?
2019, I think it was. I had broken my arm and was looking for something to do. I walked dogs and I had to take a break from that for a little while to recover. And when I started getting back into it, I wasn't really in the best mood. You know, the year went not very well and my arm was broken. So I was just kind of bummed overall. I joined TikTok and D&D TikTok obviously got on my algorithm. So I saw these people making all these cool videos and I kind of wanted to do that too. I'm usually shy, so I wanted to get out of my shell.
It's a really good way to do that because you can take as long as you need to just kind of lurk and build up the confidence to make your own TikToks. Like you get to see a wide variety, a very diverse crowd doing it. And so I think that does help build one's confidence. But I'm really interested that you kind of got into TikTok pre-pandemic because I didn't really get in until almost 2 years later and around 2021 is when I really started to get in because the pandemic had been weighing on for so long. That's when I got into it, but it sounds like you got into it kind of more in the, I guess, quote unquote, early days of it. What did you think as the community kind of continued to grow and build and more content kind of came to life over those few years in between us?
Well, yeah, I started looking and it was just the normal funny videos and stuff, and then a lot more D&D stuff, and then eventually World of Darkness stuff.
Yeah.
And near the end of the year, October, November is when I started following you, and you were doing some interviews like this with Emily and Athena and just different cool people. And that's when you had your idea for St. Pete by Night.
Well, let's talk about that too. Did you, before those days, kind of have any exposure to, or like, were you introduced to the concept of the World of Darkness before that, or was that kind of your introduction?
So yes and no. That was basically my introduction to the World of Darkness officially, I would say. Like I said, back in 1999, along with playing a few RPGs, we played Vampire, I played Bloodlines. We were filling out the little dots on the book. I don't know if it was Dark Ages or Requiem or just second edition or V20. I don't know what it was, but that was when I learned what melee was.
what the actual definition of melee was. Yeah.
We tried to fight some werewolves with a sword and my friend was like, do you have silver? No. Do you have any skill in melee? Oh, that's what that is? No.
No, I don't have that either. I assume that did not end very well in that particular.
No, so I played it once in lunch in high school, and we like died to a werewolf immediately or ran away.
So what was it that kind of appealed to you or called to you about getting involved with this whole crazy St. Pete experiment and kind of revisiting the world of darkness and kind of taking the leap into this?
Well, I kind of definitely got hyper-focused on it as you came up with your idea. I watched a lot of the lives and hung out. I talked to Cole, who was one of the first people that was talking in the lives, and I just thought it seemed pretty cool. I was like, oh, I want to get back into this. I've never, it's just like an RPG I hadn't fully experienced other than that one quick session. So,
right. Well, I think you also have an appreciation for like lore and detail and the vastness of the World of Darkness lore. I've talked about this countless times. I swear there could be like a doctorate course on it in college just because there's so many different layers. Plus with the introduction of like all these other splats that are involved as well. It's not just vampire. You're dealing with werewolves. You're dealing with wraiths. You're dealing with mages. Just the whole variety. It just makes the world that much kind of thicker and broader and more full. What about the World of Darkness itself really calls to you, or what's kind of your favorite part of the World of Darkness and the, you know, the World of Darkness system?
I think what calls to me is similar to what calls to me in D&D with the rogues and just subterfuge. So I had heard a lot of LARP experiences and how it can be a really backstabby game. So I was prepared to, you know, not survive the whole way through. And that was kind of my goal, is to see how long I could survive in St. Pete. And I technically made it the whole way through, but I think there was a lot of character choices where maybe I should have put myself in more danger, or maybe I should have been more bold. Would have been a little bit better story that way, but I think it ended up really cool.
Yeah,
it's like the subterfuge element and kind of tricking people.
It's a very high risk, high reward game. Like if you're willing to take risks, maybe they'll pay off, but it's still very much a risk. And so there are consequences and there are potential problems that can pop up by taking those risks. But it's also, if you don't take the risk, you're never going to really know what the payoff's going to be. And so let's talk about Charles. Let's talk about this being your first character, your delve into the World of Darkness. You talk about it from your perspective, and then I'll tell you from my perspective kind of what ended, you know, where we ended up going with it. But I'd love to hear kind of what you were thinking of as you were coming up with the character, as you were joining the server and going through the character creation process. Kind of talk me through that.
So like I said, I'm kind of shy. I don't always want to ask for help. So I watched all of your lives and basically watched you make all of the people's characters who were there on day one who participated in that. I kind of memorized how to make a character. And then I got the book and went through it. I had went to Spain with my dad the year before, or pre-pandemic. And he was very interested in going to Caracas, Spain, which is all the way on the east of Spain, where Salvador Dali lived. So my dad is into Dali, and my stepmom Nancy's into Dali. And they were kind of going on a little tour, going to a beach town where he lived. So I went and visited them, museum where learned all about him. And I was like, I think I want to be a Toreador in this new game that Kent's putting together. Okay. Let me Google art museums in St. Petersburg. Oh, the Salvador Dali Art Museum. Perfect. Maybe my character can work there. So I made a character that was going to be a college kid in, you know, doing art history and working at the museum. And you said, hey, you want to be Primogen? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. So I had to make my character much older. So he got about 200 years older. And I ended up, that was fun because I was like, oh, yes, I know Salvador Dali. He was my friend and things like that. And I could be from Spain and be colonial for a little bit and have like a whole story where I integrated history into it.
Well, we really tossed it into the deep end with that one. So from my perspective, like I had introduced the concept of the server, started the server up and kind of started hearing people's character concepts. And I would say easily 85 to 90% of that first batch of almost 200 people had no experience with the World of Darkness, no knowledge. You know, they were starting out fresh with kind of very simple, but, you know, interesting character concepts with room for growth, and then I received your character. And I knew that I wanted to start the game with a court filled with PCs. I did not want to have an NPC-heavy game. And the Toreador, while being the most popular clan, or one of the most popular clans at the beginning, was primarily new people. But reading over the character you had created, how in-depth you went with the character history, and how well you put together the character sheet and everything, you stood out almost immediately as somebody that I felt like could take on the challenge of the Primogen. And I was very, very impressed by you. With as little experience as you had, it seemed like you were really doing your homework and really researching. And I still think that to this day. I still think one of the best characters I received at the very beginning was Charles. And I stand by that decision to this day. I think that despite whatever, you know, issues may have came up or challenges Charles faced in the first iteration of the game, I still think that was the best choice for the clan, the best choice for the game, and I still think in a lot of ways it paid off. So talk me through kind of how you felt during that first couple of months of play, because we started out hot. I mean, that first Elysium was insanity. So talk me through kind of what that felt like, and considering that St. Pete was not like a typical tabletop game, what was it, you know, what kind of adjustments did you have to make to your style of play considering the more open LARP-esque format?
That's a good one. I'm not sure if I adjusted too much. I was just interested in, I mean, I was a Toreador, so I had it that I was going to talk about me the whole time, no matter what, and talk about Salvador Dali and art and whatever. So I was not very experienced, but I was an Ancilla, and so I just kind of took like the trust fund kid idea and ran with it. Like, I didn't have to do much, so I was thrust into this position. And it was fun. It was a little bit stressful. I had some big, TikTok personalities to contend with. And I was trying to throw a blood drive and throw parties. And they're like, no, your party's canceled. It's too dangerous. And I'm like, no, party shall go on anyways. I threw away a life boon really early that I probably should have just taken and canceled that party. But it was fun and crazy. And that was one of my proud moments, is making that party go. And the Keeper of Elysium was like, we're not going to have this party. It's too dangerous. I'm like, well, then I'm going to have it at Elysium, so you have to protect it. So that was one of my fun moves. And after that, it was good. It was fun. I took the bait of some other Primogens that were doing a certain thing. I talked up my hotel, which was my haven at the time. So I knew that was going to bite me eventually, being not so secretive about something that was important to my character, but it ended up being a good story, and I kind of saw it coming, so I wasn't too, you know, upset about it or anything.
Now, you had the challenge of being the Toreador Primogen for your first ever character on St. Pete by Night, but we decided to take it up and knock it up another notch as well by making you the Childer of the Prince on top of that. How did you feel about kind of all of these challenges I was throwing at you? Because I did, in retrospect, I kind of threw the entire brick shit house at you, and I felt like you handled it with such composure, and you stayed calm about everything. It didn't feel like you were really shaken at any given time, at least from an outsider's perspective. How did you feel about all of that? Did you enjoy that kind of aspect of the character, or if you could do it again, would you have probably preferred to have done something different?
I liked it. I liked being Isabel's child. It kind of informed my character. I had, what did I have? Disobedience is dishonor. Mm-hmm. And something else. Knowing Charles, I probably should have had something of like, let people wear whatever they want and the party must go on, because those were more of my convictions that weren't really convictions that I acted on. But I liked it. I think I should have asked you for help a lot more. Been like, hey, can I get a meeting? Or, hey, Charles sends a letter to Isabel saying, what should I do about this?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of kind of things that everybody had to learn. I don't think this was specifically on you. I think there were a lot of players who missed opportunities because they didn't take a chance, didn't take a risk, or didn't think about elements of that in the game, that there were avenues that they could have taken that they chose not to or didn't even think of at the time. And so, yeah, maybe, but honestly, despite Charles being such a polarizing figure, I'm going to say polarizing, in the fact that it was kind of like in and out of clan, there were disputes, there were conflicts, there were issues. I also think the one who laughs last laughs loudest. And so, despite all the challenges Charles faced, he was still left standing when all was said and done. Where some of his doubters and critics could not say the same. So talk me through kind of his story arc and how it kind of had to go on pause for a while before, picking up again at the end. What were you feeling and thinking throughout that?
So I think I did pretty well making the blood drive go on. I was kind of riding a high there for a little bit, and then Nirah, the Tremere Primogen, was like, "You owe me a major boon for not volunteering any Toreador for the mission." And that didn't make a lot of sense to me because Ashley went on the mission. All of the Toreador were friends with him more than they were friends with Charles. So they had already known that this mission was going on before Charles knew and decided that they had nothing to contribute. So it seemed, I think I might have said out loud, which is a slip. You got to just think before you speak in World of Darkness, especially in a LARP setting, because I was like, oh, that's silly. I'm not going to go tell them to join his mission out loud. And one of his lackeys heard that and told on me. So it made it sound like I'm not going to do what Isabel says, which is, if the prince gives an order, you should probably do it. But it was more like I had already done it, and the people who volunteered had already volunteered. So I ended up giving him a major boon, even though all the Primogens said that was kind of silly. You volunteered enough. Don't want to dwell on that. But yeah, we made a deal. He got my hotel. I continued doing a little bit of shady stuff, not too much, skirting the line. Was always honest with the Toreador, but not fully in my motives. I don't know. But in the end, I had to get put into torpor because while I did not break the masquerade or do anything too bad, I didn't want to have the political rep on Isabel for me being like fast and loose with the rules.
Right. So as this is After Dark, obviously we take questions from the chat. So if you have a question for Tyler, whether it's about Charles, whether it's about his TTRPG experience, whether it's about World of Darkness, whatever, go ahead and hop over into the chat and ask the question. We're going to take our first question from the chat, which comes from Jay, also known as Hugo Boss X8. What was the greatest challenge of being Primogen?
The greatest challenge of being Primogen was all of the egos in the Toreador, I think. I also just out of character didn't want to have people be grounded, have people be torpored for their first mistake. I didn't know exactly what an adequate punishment is. And I think that's part of why I wanted to talk to Isabel more, is I should have tattled on everyone. Because I was trying to gain their trust by, being the cool dad or the cool leader. I mean, like, oh yeah, you can go hang out with your, boyfriend and do whatever you want, even though what you ended up doing is gonna get him killed. Or you can go hang out with the Ventru, even though that's gonna go poorly. So I think being a little bit more hard on the children would have been good. I'm not sure if I answered the question there.
No, yeah. I mean, you said that, like, taking a firmer hand is probably one of, or knowing how to kind of properly adjudicate within the clan, especially since you're dealing with a lot of your out of character peers. You're dealing with people that you've just met, you're dealing with people that you respect, that you know, might have varying opinions about. It's a very delicate social balance to play, which is, again, kind of the LARP dynamic, is when you're in LARP, you're dealing with people you don't know. You're dealing with people you do know who are playing characters that are kind of opposing to you. There's a lot of things to consider, and so I could totally understand taking a more passive or a more, like, I want everybody to like me kind of perspective, because there are a lot of social dynamics at play. But like you said, the world of darkness is a completely different beast. One wrong move, you know, there are consequences to everything that happens.
Well, that was also what was fun about it is, you know, Carmen was saying, oh, I'm in so much trouble for hacking the blood bank. And I'm like, no, you're fine. The prince is going to be proud of you. Like, maybe we got hacked into, but you did something, you know, found out some info and you can go give it to her. And she was, you know, proud of Carmen. It was just scenes talking to the whip and the herald and trying to figure out my place, and just like powerful scenes in the museum where we're arguing and doing all this and that. So people, the players are really smart, and they can tell when you're lying, and they can tell when you're BSing, and they can give you a little bit of license to do that stuff. But if you don't do it sneakily enough, you know, with enough guile, then they know you're full of it. And so they can kind of take that into their character motivations as well.
So this is another question from the chat, which, to give some context, there was a point where several Caitiff had been discovered living in the city. The prince mandated that those Caitiff had to be adopted. So Tumultus asks, what Caitiffs did you consider adopting when that point came up? Or did you consider adopting any? Because there was no obligation to. It was up to the Caitiffs to find a home.
I'm trying to remember. There's one really obvious example, but I'm trying to remember if we were going to grab anyone else, and I don't think we were. Siren. That was the one character that I really should have gone hard for, because they ended up getting adopted by the Tremere Primogen and ended up being the Harpy. So that would have been really good if Carmen lost the Harpy race, which she did, to Siren. We could have still had the Harpy, and instead the Harpy was best buds with the Tremere Primogen again, and that factored heavily into how I lost my hotel. They were fair, but I think I brought up a bunch of things as Charles that could be different about the boon system, and they were implemented afterwards, so I thought that was pretty cool. But it would have been nice to have Siren on my side.
Yeah, to have two Harpy candidates in your pocket would have been a benefit to the Toreador for sure, especially since that's kind of a position that is tailor-made for the Toreador clan. I mean, that there's nothing more Toreador than the Harpy position in the world of darkness, in my mind. So Charles ends up going into torpor, and that's when you came up with Lucien. Now tell me a little bit about Lucien, and tell me kind of what the idea was behind that character and bringing that character into the game.
Now, Lucien was one of my favorite characters. I had been doing some like RP with him previously, and, you know, making a story with Mouse on the community and just working him out really well before I brought him to the game. So when he came into the game, he was like fully fleshed out, and I felt really comfortable being him. We had the Baron debates and who was going to be Baron. And I think I did really well on that. So I got some good quips and some good things in the end. I didn't end up becoming the Baron, but I think that's fine, because as we know, in World of Darkness, it's better to not have the spotlight on you and have the power unless you're really ready for it. It's better to, you know, be the low man on the totem pole and kind of run things from behind the scenes if you can.
Absolutely. And kind of work your way up. Because again, those positions, those power positions, while they seem so appealing on the surface, there's always a level of responsibility and a level of having a target on your back. As we learned from the barons that were existing at the time. You know, nothing good lasts forever. It's easy to earn the position. It's a lot harder to keep it.
Yeah.
And so you've got Lucian, who ended up becoming kind of a sweeper of the neutral zone and kind of a more of an enforcer position, which was in a lot of ways diametrically opposite to Charles, who was taking a more social perspective. What did you feel about that transition, and was that something you were kind of looking forward to and excited about being involved in?
Yeah, that was kind of fun to be a little bit more intimidating than shady. The Barons had a lot of it covered, so I just hung out in an asylum and got to know people and kept an eye out and was kind of like a free bodyguard for the businesses in the asylum. I would show up and make sure everything was going smoothly. There were a few, let's say, the right of destruction was exercised a couple times, but that always ended up in someone else's domain. So that was just the barons taking care of what they thought needed to be taken care of. So.
Solution also kind of had an interesting other side to him, which was honeypot, if I may put it
Oh.
so bluntly. He had a very kind of alluring mystique, which caught the eye of a rather up-and-coming toreador at the time, who had some very recognizable to you, the player, but also kind of important connections that were forming throughout that process. What was kind of the thought behind courting, seducing, conniving Irina, and kind of bringing her into Lucian's world and Lucian's story?
So that's an interesting one. I think Carmen was after, was it Valentine's Day or one of the parties? He had drank from her, and Carmen was like, "Oh, you should go hang out with her more." But Carmen just saying that kind of made him suspicious, but gave him an idea. So we hung out and we were friends and we went on adventures and dates, and my goal was to get her into slightly more dangerous or risky situations every time. So we would get closer to the Baron's territory or go for motorcycle rides. And then eventually we went to Sebastian's territory, which did get her in trouble. So it was kind of like testing the Camarilla of how much I think. Maybe I had met Isabel at the Succubus Club and she was talking about freedom, and I like that as Lucian. But it was definitely different. St. Pete is different than a lot of Camarilla cities from what you told me. So I was going from that angle of let's see how much they let the children get away with before they get in trouble.
So you played Lucian up until pretty much the end of the first iteration of the game, but you did have a moment to kind of bring Charles back for the last Elysium, to kind of put a bow on everything, bring some things to a close, and kind of have one final appearance. How did it feel to be able to bring back that character after, at that time, I think it had been at least 6 months to a year since you had played him? What was it like stepping back into Charles's shoes again?
Stepping back into Charles's shoes was very fun, very comforting. I got to tie up all the loose ends that I really wanted to, which was great. I got to talk to Marguerite and offer to volunteer at the Kindred Support Center, which is a thing that is carried over to this version of the game in the neutral zone in the lore. I got to talk to Carmen, who had went through several character arcs and several changes from wanting to be someone who helped her sire to being scared of her sire after Miami to kind of reconnecting with him in the end and kind of learning the lesson that Charles was trying to teach the Toreador the whole time is, what are you doing with your unlife if you're not happy, if you're not having fun? So I think she kind of embraced that and became a character that did what she wanted to do instead of what everyone else wanted her to do. And then that kind of She's like, I don't want to have this hotel. Why do I still have this hotel? So she gave Charles back his hotel. And I think like all the loose ends that I'd popped up for his, you know, religious element with Marguerite and his having fun and living life, being carefree element with Carmen. I think it was very satisfying wrapping up all those character arcs.
Now, I don't think I'm revealing too much by saying that one of the interesting things about Charles was that he did have a fondness for religion, but he also had the bane of being repelled by crosses. Did you intend that? Was that kind of by design based off of your connection to Isabel, who anyone who played in the first iteration knew she was very, very devoutly religious to the point of having true faith? How was that, and what kind of made you decide to take on that challenge of being repelled by something you revered so much?
Yeah, I think that was just a really good conflict for Charles to have. He was Catholic growing up in Spain, born in Florida, in St. Augustine, and then growing up in Spain, going with Isabel. You know, Catholicism would be very important to him, especially at that time. But that would be something that would be very hard if you feel you're cursed or eternally damned just because of what you are. So that would definitely be reinforced by those two banes. I saw those two banes and was intrigued by them. So I picked them, yeah, for that purpose.
Well, and that's a perfect kind of World of Darkness thing. Character building thing in general, I think, is that one of the best things about the system is its encouragement to have flawed characters, and you taking it to the next level of I'm flawed by something that I, you know, am attached to, kind of put it holding your feet over the fire at all times in a way, I think is so distinctly World of Darkness. It's so cool and such a clever kind of concept that I definitely encourage people who are, you know, making characters or characters for the first time to really consider taking that option of, you know, I love this thing, even if it repels me, even if it hurts me, you know, and trying to battle with the conflict of that, because that's what Vampire and a lot of other World of Darkness splats are, is just that balance. How do you deal with, like, how do you maintain your humanity while dealing with this beast? How do you, you know, keep the rage inside while also fighting back for a world that is dying in terms of werewolf? Like, it is a balancing act, and I really thought that you portrayed that and really took on that challenge full force, and that's super cool. So,
thanks.
The first iteration comes to an end, and you are promoted to the rank of moderator, which you have done amazing at. Question from the chat. Nabbers asks, what made you decide to try your hand at storytelling?
So I think, kind of like I said from the beginning, I was trying to have all of the players have the most fun that they could have. And a lot of the choices that I made that disappointed me as Charles, but were narratively satisfying, was to let other people have their narrative. Like, I tried not to metagame, and I would see people be like, oh, that person's talking to that person, but I don't know that they're talking to that person in a private space or whatnot. So I would kind of see what stories were developing right away. The whip was starting to get seduced by the Ventru Primogen, and that was a story that I kind of saw coming. So there was just things that I was like, I think in order for everyone to have the most fun, I want to support these stories above my character. So to do that, I was figuring it, you know, I would like to be a storyteller.
So how much experience before this have you had in running games? Like, you know, it doesn't have to be World of Darkness specifically, but just games in general, and what kind of made you take the leap on all of that?
I think, oh my gosh, I don't know when it was, if I was on TikTok by then. It must have been before. I just went on Roll20 and found a random group of people, and it actually worked out really nice. They were all pretty cool. We all made friends, and I did a rather long campaign. We got to level 14, until before it started fizzling out. That was a challenge because at level 14, there is no encounter that you can put together that isn't going to take 3 hours and be boring unless you do it just right. So I was throwing two or three vampires at them at once, which are legendary creatures. I did it for my friends from high school. And so me and my friends from high school are still playing TTRPGs to this day. We hang out on Discord and Fantasy Grounds and play Dungeons and Dragons still. So my friend, who is the forever DM, I gave him a break and we just take turns now. And my other friends have interests in being the DM GM. But I think me and my other friend Brad have been doing it the most.
What appeals to you most about being the one running the story? Because it's a lot of responsibility and it's a lot of work, and it's kind of a never-ending chore, that, is a thankless job. What appeals to you most about doing it?
I think I like all the spinning plates. Because sometimes when I go back to being a player in Dungeons and Dragons, I'm like, well, this is kind of slow. I'm only playing one person. So jumping back and forth between the good guy and the bad guy, and line of this person and line of that person, and planning. When I was a kid, I always liked to do world building, honestly. So even when I was really little, I would take, draw a map or something like that. Take construction paper and put down continents and name them all, kind of like Lord of the Rings, and make a big story about them before I even had players. So I think that's fun to make a world to interact in.
Yeah, and that you find that that well is kind of endless. If you want to add something, you can find a way to add it, and it can kind of change the entire dynamic of the world you've built. I know that personally, St. Pete in its final form, in the way it is now, and the way it was during the first iteration, was not at all what I'd had planned. But I had to adjust course and kind of change because of players like you, because of all of the wonderful members in our community. We had to, adjust as we went, and I think it ended up being better. I think it ended up being, more than I could have ever asked for, in a good way. And I think that that's something to say for just being flexible in world building, being willing to take your vision and stick to that vision to a certain point, but also kind of being able to open it up and allow for outside input, allow for other storytellers like yourself to come in and kind of change it and add their own flair to it, add their own signature to it, and kind of communal world building. St. Petersburg by Night is brought to you through collaborations with our partnered vendors, Wolfpack Dice, Ember Fox Dice, Dragon Ink Dice, Bera the Bard, Champs Tramps, Panchi Artista, and Chromatic Creations. Links to our partner vendors, as well as our Twitch and YouTube channels, can be found on our website, stpetebynight.com. The official theme song for St. Petersburg by Night is Vampire by Faith and Failure. You can find them at faithandfailure.com. You can follow SPBN on all socials with the hashtag StPeteByNight. If you wish to support our program, you can do so at ko-fi.com/StPeteByNight to help keep the stories rolling. What would you say? This is a question from the chat. Arlie the Mystic asks, is there anything from previous systems, either previous renditions of World of Darkness, depending on how much you know about those, or other games entirely that you wish would be in the current system? Is there any kind of like mechanics or kind of rules or anything from other games that you've played, that you wish could be in the World of Darkness system?
That's a good question. I'm not too familiar with, no, I actually am. V20 had a lot of cool things that they're bringing back now, and I think you've said this and other people, is the merits and the flaws. There were so many merits and so many flaws, and with the player's guide, I like the flaw of stinky or stench. It can kind of give you that flavor. Red eyes was something that I would imagine Charles would have had if we had some of that V20 flaws. So I think that's something that they're slowly bringing back, which I think is pretty cool. From other systems, I don't know. I have been playing, I finally beat Bloodlines after 20 years a couple of months ago, and I've been replaying as the Malkavian. So,
Oh God, that's a completely different playing experience in Bloodlines. Like Bruja, Toreador, Venture, yes, they have their own kind of little bits and differences, but Malkavian is an entirely different experience. For anybody who hasn't played Bloodlines before, do not start as a Malkavian. It is hard mode to the nth degree in that game, and I think there's a lot more that you come to appreciate playing Malkavian when you're doing it on a, like a repeat playthrough, when it's not your first time through, once you kind of have an idea of all the machinations that are going on, you can see all of the kind of subtle hints that they've dropped in for Malkavians, even as early as like the first couple of scenes or first couple of interactions. The Malkavians are just, it's absolutely wild.
It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of different dialogue options. So that is one thing. I think there is an issue with Malkavians being, you got to be sensitive to mental issues, but also some of the lore and some of the Bloodlines thing, it is kind of, as they call it, fish milk, but also there's the Oracle, and there's all these different kinds of, genres within the clan. So I'm not quite sure. I know Bloodlines was a thing where they split it up further and did all that weird stuff, but maybe like a couple different builds for each clan that would be recommended. So you can be like kind of silly or the kind of serious or somewhere in between, where the words you say in the dialogue options and Bloodlines are very important, and the way they phrase it, they're like, I'm here and then I'm gone, or like, I want to know what's in your head instead of tell me what you're thinking. So the way the dialogue is phrased in that is pretty cool. I'd like to see
Absolutely.
more of that.
And with Bloodlines 2 on the horizon, having finally started to come to fruition, clans being announced, it looks like we're probably going to hear about a release date sooner rather than later. It's actually happening after we've kind of had a lot of false starts in the past. There's a lot of pressure on the game coming out because Bloodlines, as a game, the original Bloodlines holds up still to this day. It definitely ranks as one of my favorite video games as a whole. Where does it kind of rate on your list, or does it fall in your list of kind of favorite video games? And what are some other video games you enjoy?
Favorite video games? I would say it's not all the way up there, but for what it is, it's really good. It's that kind of RPG that is very different than what we have today. Like Baldur's Gate 3 is an awesome game. I've been playing a lot of that. Reminds me a little bit of that, where the dialogue options are very important. You could play it multiple times and get a different experience with different characters saying slightly different things or going down different paths. I like to play Civilization, like Civ 5, Civ 6, turn-based strategy games that give me a lot of time to strategize and contemplate. GTA as well. So a little
Yeah,
bit of the wild, a little bit of the cerebral.
I think also with the timing of when Bloodlines came out, the original Bloodlines, it set a standard for RPGs, like really early in its day, before there was BioWare, before the Dragon Age series, before even Fable and games like that had come out. It really did put more of the character building role play element into gaming, I think, ahead of its time. That's what I would say, is it was a game ahead of its time. But for all the deficiencies it had, like the graphics are very much dated, the setting is kind of very much dated now, that
You
the
still have
game
to go
still holds
download a
up.
fan-made patch to play it, so.
Yeah, but it still holds up. So you said you like Civilization and games like that. That kind of ties in really well to your knack for world building and your ability to kind of create something based off of the materials that are given. So let's talk about your games. Because once again, never one to stick to the shallow end. You have two games kind of currently in development or currently running on the St. Pete by Night server. Your first game, which you've been running for probably almost 2 months now, the Misfit Blood Cult, and now your other game, which is in development and I believe going to be launching in the new year, correct?
Yes.
So let's talk about those games a little bit without giving away any spoilers. Give us a base rundown of both games, or at least both coteries, and kind of tell us a little bit about it.
So in the Misfit Blood Cult, that one was inspired by the Cult of the Blood Gods. It was a great book. I've read a lot of it. I can't say I've read it cover to cover. It's a hard read sometimes because a lot of it is narrated from a Giovanni elder to a Giovanni fledgling and other clans. You know, it's got that narrative element to it. But there's a lot of different cults and a lot of different sects that could be in those cults. So I am kind of adding as many, throwing the kitchen sink at it, but revealing it one at a time. The circulatory system is in town, which is from the core book. But, you know, that's just a really creepy thing that you could be doing. So they are working for them, trying to collect vessels or find the right resonance for certain clients, while also making their coterie, which is their own farm, which is free range, shall we say. So trying to actually have healthy, happy, morally sound methods to find the vitae that they're looking for. And that's what they're doing. So they might encounter a bunch of different cults. Right now they're looking for a book and Tremere Secrets, which is getting them in a little bit of trouble. So that's fun too.
What has been the biggest challenge of taking on that coterie? Because this is going to be like your first truly like serious, fully formed chronicle that you're going to be running. What were some challenges as a storyteller that you ran into when putting that game together?
So a lot of the challenges, I think, were a little bit holding on to the old style of the game and wanting more just to do RP without having much of a plot at first, trying to see where everyone is, use their flaws against them, which is very World of Darkness. So it took me a little while. I think the players were all new, most of them is their first time being Anarch or being in a coterie game. So making sure that the missions were really tight and that the coterie had some good chemistry took a little while, but I think we're getting there and it's turning out to be fun and exciting.
Well, also pacing can be a big thing, especially starting with a new group, is that World of Darkness kind of moves at a different pace than a lot of other TTRPGs. So people coming from a more Dungeons and Dragons pace might be used to like go, 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 action, action, action. Whereas with Vampire, you really put on the brakes a lot more and slow it down and focus on a lot more of the social elements and the various relations and interactions that the characters have. And so I think that, especially when I first ran Vampire, which is, you know, 25, almost 30 years ago, It was an adjustment for sure. Like if you try to run it like a D&D game, you know, while people are familiar with that style, it can be very jarring. Or if you try to do a slow build, it can be very jarring. And so I think that's also kind of a challenge that storytellers have to overcome, is what is the pace of your game going to be? And are the players, you know, amenable to that pacing? Are they able to change their mindset and change kind of the way they view the game to take that pacing? And also, it's a horror game, but people tend to either go towards comedic or to almost emo over dramatic. And so trying to kind of balance that out can be a challenge as well. So tell me about this new coterie that you're working with, and what are some things that you took from the learning process with the first coterie that you're taking into kind of consideration for the second coterie?
So for the new coterie, we're going to do more character building in the beginning. They had the idea of doing some scenes that take place in the past where their characters meet each other and how they get to know each other, how they interact, and how they kind of become a coterie. So that's probably going to be session one. And then from there, I'm hoping to go with some more Lucian missions, where since being the sweeper, he's going to give them a couple missions to, well, they also made a gang that wants to sell arms and drugs to different people. And Lucian is already heavy in that, where I left him off. So he is going to kind of take control of them, see how far he can push them to do certain things and how much they'll work for him or be loyal to him, but also giving them missions to uphold the masquerade as the sweeper, like go and get this videotape, which breaks the masquerade, and destroy it. Or this thumb drive, which is another thing I've taken inspiration from Bloodlines is from. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, taking turns between character building and plot, I think, is important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you need to develop the characters. And yes, some of that happens with storylines, but if the characters don't have a personal stake, if they don't have something about the story that draws to them or calls upon them, whether it's their convictions or their, you know, touchstones or their attachments or anything like that, it kind of can allow or force players to kind of tune out and not really take a vested interest. It's just a job at that point, which is a story in its own right. But I think really putting in that time to grow the characters and to find out what their, you know, strengths and weaknesses are, to find out what makes them tick or what challenges them, can also help your story. Because if you have a story that doesn't take those things into consideration, again, it can come off very kind of shallow or kind of meaningless to the players. Even if it is a very, very good story, you need that personal element. So I definitely think taking the extra time to get to know the characters and to kind of find out those little things about them can help alter your story in a way that's going to make it compelling, yeah, and profound for them. So let's talk about the St. Pete community. It's a massive community of varying elements, very, very diverse. And, you know, people from all walks of life kind of come into the community. What are some things you like about the community? What are some things that you, you know, wish you'd see more of? And maybe what are some things that you wish would change within the community?
I like all the people that I've met, you know, everyone who comes is really cool, and getting to know new people, making new friends, and having the friendships last, and hanging out and playing Valheim and whatever else we do on the side. What I wish would be different is, you know, been the same the whole time, is just the friends you make, and the bane of TTRPGs is just scheduling, and when people get busy and real life gets in the way, other friends, you know, go and have other responsibilities that they got to do, so you don't see as much of them. It's nice when they come back and get to play their old characters. But yeah, it's I don't know if you can fix that, but just having people that have, you know, the time and the wherewithal to play a big, long chronicle game, or, you know, that kind of thing. What else I would like to see more of would be the open RP, and I think we're gonna have some of that tonight, so that's fun, going back to the little bit of the old style where you just kind of hang out with a room and get to be your character and talk to each other in character.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those who don't know, at the time of this recording, we have a open RP Succubus Club event happening on the server, actually in about 2 minutes is when it's going to be kicking off. And yeah, that was kind of one of the big favorite elements of the old iteration of the game, was the open RP, was the, you know, it's going round the clock. And while we've changed it to a certain degree. That element was something that was very important to me throughout the revamp process that we kept, because I think it was really, really engaging. I mean, when the idea first came up for this whole, you know, server and everything, I wanted to have a play when you can, you know, get involved as much as you want, player driven, because scheduling is the bane of TTRPGs, as you said. I wanted to have something that was kind of always there. Now, of course, there's slow times. There's, you know, times where it's more busier than others, and there are conflicting schedules as to getting involved. Holidays and
everything.
Right, exactly. But the fact that it is kind of always around, always available, always an option, I think really, really appeals to the players. And it does allow people to at least get a taste of the World of Darkness, even if they can't dive completely into it. So what are some of your... Oh, go ahead.
One of the things that we kind of brought back, but it depends on the storyteller, which is really cool, is one-on-one sessions with the storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your session during the week, and if you want like an hour, 30 minutes to do some downtime projects or some scheming or to build your character a little bit more, then most of the storytellers offer, you know, appointments to flesh that out a little bit more, which is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think those moments can be very intense, but can also be make you feel very seen and very prioritized as a player. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've got to get on offering some more of those to my players as well, because it was something that I did miss, was really getting to have that one-on-one focused time with the characters. What are some of your favorite moments from the original iteration of the game?
Favorite moments from the original iteration. A lot of them I wasn't in the stream where Eights sacrificed himself for the other deputies. That was a really kind of touching thing. Someone donated Twitch points to heal, and they got to drink. You just kind of improv that they were drinking the blood that was found there, and it was the blood of one of our players, Preston, Dorian, a beloved character. So we got to kind of see his last moments and get some closure on that. Isabel chopping off the handmaiden's head, or chopping off the Malkavian vigilante who was going to be spared, but then you leave the room and you come back and everyone's covered in blood and there's thunder and like, what happened? The Victoria Ashes wedding reception, that was fun to play with new players to the game and old players and kind of connect storylines there. And then the disaster that happened after that. And the Lysandre Tea Party, of course, which is when Charles got to go hang out with the Lysandre and all the other Toreador and then get shot at on the boat by the Second Inquisition and some plants from Tampa, I think.
Yep.
There's a lot of fun moments, just to name a few.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to bringing back more of that communal aspect, starting with tonight, starting with this kind of like testing mm-hmm. Succubus Club event and leading into some other things, because that was another thing from the first iteration that I missed, was like the big Elysiums, the big baronial conferences, the kind of world events where everybody kind of either got to bear witness to or be involved in the things that were going on. So again, it's a balancing act, because you want to give people the personal experience, but also making people feel a part of the greater story is a big element of it as well. Shifting gears, Charles and Lucian led to you cosplaying and doing TikToks, character TikToks, something that you are very, very good at, if I can say. Like, it's very inspirational. I've had a hard time sticking with, you know, cosplaying and making character TikToks, but you are very, very good at it. Every time I open my FYP, I seem to see a video from you. It's just like an endless well of entertaining content. So what kind of inspired you or gave you the confidence to take that leap?
I think I was doing a lot of D&D content, which I kind of miss, but the algorithm being the way it is, you just kind of pick a lane. And so I switched to the lane of the World of Darkness, because that was what everyone was doing, is it's pretty cool to have your original character and to cosplay. I got mad respect for the people who do makeup and all that stuff. I feel like I'm just putting on a leather jacket or like a nice cool red suit. And that has been fun because it's motivated me to go out and to buy some cool clothes or to find some old cool clothes that I already have and repurpose them to, you know, look badass or to look sleek. I think Charles has a lot of my aesthetic, or this might be a Charles shirt, almost like Hawaiian style shirts, or, you know, Cuban Mexican Guavera shirts with the hats and all that stuff. So it's improved my wardrobe, I'll say. I go out and I look cool if I've been cosplaying that day.
One of the biggest challenges I run into for creating character content is finding sounds. Now, mm-hmm. You always seem to be a bevy or a wealth of sound clips and amazing, like, quotes from movies and stuff like that. Where, and, you know, you can give away a few trade secrets if you'd like, but where do you find this stuff? Like, where do you come up with all of the amazing sounds that you use and all of the... Where do you find them? Because I usually find like the more trendy, popular ones that it seems everyone's doing, which makes me not want to do it because I don't want to just jump on the bandwagon of everybody doing the same sound. Where do you find your sounds?
I would like to thank my friends and mutuals for half of them doing duets and just getting, you know, messages saying, oh, I think this sound would be cool for Charles or cool for... Lucian really helps, but otherwise I just got to thank the algorithm. If I look at Charles type content, maybe I'm looking at Salvador Dali or Spain or art, I get a lot of really deep and meaningful things about Spain and art. One of them, my favorite sound for Charles, was a scene cut from the Game of Thrones, a deleted scene between the old Meister, the one that Peter Dinklage tricked into, you know, descend away. He's like, ooh, and he's really feeble and absent-minded, but the king, not Joffrey, but Joffrey's grandpa, the real guy in charge, talks to him and says, cut it out. I know you're smarter than this. I know you're not that feeble-minded. What's your deal? And he says, I don't want to be the tallest flower. I just want to remain in the garden. And other things from Lucian, I'll look up Goodfellas or stuff like that to kind of get sounds. And then once you do that, the algorithm just feeds you these really great sounds that I would never find. Just, you know, so the algorithm helps me a lot.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you can find anything. TikTok especially is so vast, like that well is so deep. And I think you make a really good point of, like, look to what your character's interests are. Watch videos that, you know, might not have to do directly with vampires or directly with World of Darkness or directly with that kind of stuff. Like, look at just the human element of it. You never know what you're going to find. You might find an audio from a TV show that nobody has watched in 20 years or something that just pops up in the algorithm. It's a little bit spooky how well the algorithm reads us and tries to tailor our interests. But I think you're right that it's just like, find what your character's interested in, and you never know what kind of audios will pop up and if they're going to have a relevance to, you know, your character, or might make for a good TikTok. The question I always like to ask the people who make oodles and oodles and endless wells of content, how many videos do you film in a day? Like, if you sit down to do a filming of Lucian or of Charles, how many TikToks do you knock out at once?
See, I feel like I'm cheating sometimes because I'll take my phone and I'll put it, and I'll just, if I'm getting comfortable, I'm sitting in my desk chair like I'm doing. So for Charles, I'll just sit in my desk chair like this, and you kind of just see that much of me. I'll put my phone on my refrigerator and film a bunch of them for Lucian, just kind of, he's more using my arms for punching or posing. I have about 20 sounds. So if I'm going to film for Lucian, I'll probably try to knock out 15. some of the sounds are really hard. Like some of the sounds are just a speech. And if you're going to lip sync it, it's hard to memorize a whole speech. So I do ones that are 7 seconds long, which the platform likes, and 15 seconds long. But some of them that are like 60 seconds long end up being really good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know we've had people on the server in the past who've been like, yeah, I filmed like 47 TikToks today, or like 60 something TikToks. And it's just mind boggling to me, because like I sit down and film 10 and I'm exhausted. Yeah. Like it's just with, especially considering the editing and the everything else that goes into it and getting them prepared to be drafts. And it can be a full-time job. So even when you say like, I'll knock out 15. I'm like, oh my God, how? It's absolutely amazing to me. So shifting back to kind of the game, Charles, because you talked very nicely about Charles in the TikTok bit. What are some things you wish you could have done or could have happened for Charles or as Charles in the first iteration?
So I actually have been thinking about this recently. One of the things that I wish I had done with Charles was they took away my hotel. So I went and I had a little rivalry with Carmen at the time as well. So I went to Sebastian and asked him if he wanted to go in on a hotel with me. And then he went Anarch. So I kind of would like to see Charles as an Anarch. I kind of would like to see Charles as a kingpin, or, you know, the man behind the throne, like Tony Montana, just sitting in his big chair, kind of controlling a small area of, you know, wherever he ended up. Yeah. So not listening to the clan and maybe continuing to be corrupted by Sebastian could have been a fun way to take him.
Yeah, that would have been an interesting kind of twist to the character in a different
direction. That was one of the things I was thinking. I was like, he was all in on Isabel, but the only other character was another one of your characters that was great. That he would have gone with was Sebastian. Because part of Carmen's backstory was, I imagine Charles was having fun with Sebastian and he was a party guy. So that's kind of why he wasn't the perfect politician. He was more concerned with everyone having fun than, you know, the status quo.
Yeah, I definitely can see the similarities between Charles and Sebastian. I feel like they were both cut from kind of the same cloth, mm-hmm. in the fact that they really enjoyed the bounty of an unlife where you could save money, you could, you know, party all the time, you could build an empire and then burn it down. Like you could have fun with unlife, which I think that is an element that kind of falls by the wayside for a lot of players and characters. Is like, well, what's the positives of being a kindred? What's the positives of being a vampire? And it's the fact that you can just do shit. You can try things. You could go skydiving, and if it goes wrong, well, it'll take a few months to heal, but like, you know, oh well. Like, you could just go crazy in that regard and really just do all the things that you couldn't do in life. As long as you maintain the masquerade, of course. But like, you know, there are a lot more possibilities. And I think that people get kind of lost in the rabbit hole of like trying to maintain a normalcy, or trying to be, or being paranoid at the aspect of being caught and being, you know, outed as doing something wrong, instead of just like, well, how can I tiptoe up to that line without crossing it? How much can I get away with? And there is actually a lot. Like, the traditions are, in a lot of ways, very vague. So as long as you are, you know, keeping to the spirit of the tradition, you can push a lot of boundaries. And I think that I got to see you start to dip your toes into that, but not really ever go full in or go as hard as you wanted to with Charles's kind of dark side turn, as it were. I could definitely see that.
And I think that's the really interesting thing about humanity, is a lot of humanity is seen sometimes, you know, could be the Catholic side of Charles or the religious side where you care about people and you help the poor and you help the sick. But humanity is also about, you know, the flesh and having fun and going crazy and feeling things. So that is more of what Sebastian was about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just being not in kindred politics, but being in mortal society where you party with mortals and mortals look up to you and you can kind of play in that way. And that's part of the masquerade.
Well, now Charles has the position of seneschal to his own childer, Prince Carmine, who kind of, I guess, jumped over him into the position of prince, kind of superseded Charles into the position of prince. But I think that Charles is in a very perfect place for Charles. I don't think Charles was ever supposed to be prince. I think Charles was always going to be, like you said, the advisor behind the throne, the person that's kind of like the go-to for information and stuff, who feeds what they want to feed to the person in charge and lets them be the face so that he can go party, so that he can go, you know, be about and around. Because as we've seen from princes, they don't tend to get out a lot. They tend to, you know, they've got a big target on their backs. They're not going to really put themselves out there. And especially for a Toreador prince, that could be almost like torture. So I think that there are still a lot of great stories that can be told with Charles, and I'm really glad that he is still to this day a part of the setting and a part of the campaign. And I think that there's a lot we can do with that. So we'll have to talk about that at some point, of how to bring Charles into some of the stories and how to get him involved, because he is a very, very fascinating character. And I'm glad that you have continued to build the confidence to, you know, I mean, you've just in the time that I've known you, you've gone from someone who is brand new to World of Darkness to someone who's a storyteller. And I feel like your skill has grown along with that as well. So it'd be very interesting to see how we could bring Charles back into the mix and see kind of what's changed about him, or what, you know, what new elements of the character could come to light in some stories that are told. So I think that would be very, very cool. So I'm going to ask another question from the chat. If anybody else has any questions, submit them now. We'll do kind of a rapid fire Q&A, and then we'll put a bow on this thing and go hop over onto the server and do some Succubus Club shenanigans. But Hugo Boss J asks, going back to the D&D talk, what is your favorite D&D monster?
My favorite D&D monster. There is a couple. Some notables are the Flumph. They're like the neutral, good characters in the Underdark that kind of are attracted to brain activity. Mind Flayers are pretty cool, especially with Baldur's Gate 3 coming out. I might have to say Mind Flayer.
Mind Flayer. Okay. What about Mind Flayers appeals to you? Does it still have to do with like mental manipulation and kind of the more mentally divisive side? Or what about Mind Flayers appeals to you?
I think that's a lot of it is maybe we'll put Mind Flayers aside a little bit and go with Intellect Devourer, because they're both kind of the same subspecies. I don't know how that works in D&D, but yeah, I think Mind Flayers are really cool with subterfuge. So you can eat somebody's brain and you can gain all their knowledge, and then you can have a hive mind. So you can share that knowledge with everybody who's like you, with all the little creatures that you command. And you have the Intellect Devourers, which are like a brain with legs, and they kind of go into somebody who doesn't have a brain anymore. So you eat somebody's brain, you get an Intellect Devourer, you put them into somebody, into that person's brain, and then you kind of share the hive mind with them. So you send that person back out into the world, and they're like, oh, hey, Dave, what's wrong? They're like, oh, and they can kind of infiltrate that society, kind of like you did with the Zemitzi, which was really cool. And the first one is you have these people or these flesh puppets that go back and kind of trick everybody into, you know, following their command when really they're part of the Mind Flayer hive now.
Right. What is a clan that you haven't had the chance to play yet, but you'd always want to, you'd love to try your hand at?
I think I'm ready to do Malkavian. That would be a lot of fun. Like I said, I've been playing, Toreador is my favorite. I started with that in Bloodline, so that was part of the reason I started with Toreador in this game. But I think Malkavian would be really cool. Without taking it too far or being silly, you can kind of do what they're doing in Bloodlines as I play it, is phrasing words a different, or phrasing sentences a different way. Like, words are important and what you say means something. So if you tweak that just a little bit, where the context is the same, is different. The context is different, but the words, if you translate them, they mean something. They're the, like, what's in your brain? What's, I want to hear what's in your brain other than like, hey, let's have a conversation.
Right.
So just the wordplay you could do.
Yeah. And I think that Malkavians, I think that you can remember too, that like, you can have the crazy, you can have the madness as it were, but have it more inside. Two of my characters in my Dead Man's Hand group are Malkavians, and the way they play Malkavians is a very good, subtle way you can play it, where it's, you know, it's all still happening. There are ways, like, Malkavians have layers. They're my favorite clan, obviously. But they have so many layers to them and so many different avenues that you can play it. Like, and I said, you could do that with every clan, theoretically, but some clans, there's just kind of, they have a type. Ventru have a type. Toreador have a type. With Malkavians, you can be any of those types, but spicy. Like, you could be any of those types with a little extra sugar on top. And so I think that really there's no wrong answer for a Malkavian character concept, as long as it is done tactfully, as long as it is done with consideration for, you know, mental health and everything like that. I think there's just no wrong way to play one. Anyway, go ahead.
And that's what I mean. That's, you can do it tactfully if you choose your words correctly. So you're not crazy. You're the only one that's sane. You see things, but the way you express yourself confuses people, so they think you're crazy. So the words you choose convey a certain meaning, but it takes someone else to translate that meaning correctly in order to know what you're saying. So I think that's really cool. You're like, oh, wow, that meant this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's like a puzzle with your RP.
Well, Tyler, I have absolutely loved this conversation. I'm so grateful for you joining me. Is there anything else you'd like to just say as a whole to the people while you have the spotlight that you have right now? Anything that you want to just put out there?
Oh, man. I don't know. I'm going to have to go with probably stealing your thunder up here in a little bit, but come join us on St. Pete by Night. We'd love to have you. Check out the TikTok and follow us there, and check out the Discord, and it's always fun to have more people in the community and more people to play Vampire with and to meet all these cool folks and to make new friends. So that's what I'm here for, and that's what I'm staying for, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, I can't offer you a lot of rub, but go follow Tyler the Nerd on TikTok. That's Tyler_the_nerd with a 3 instead of an E. He's got 3,135 followers as of this recording, which is more than 3 times what the St. Pete by Night account has. But hey, if we can give him a little bit of, a little bit of a rub, go give him a follow. He is one of our newest storytellers, but definitely one of our biggest up-and-comers in the storytelling scene. And we're looking forward to the stories he has to tell and what he has to offer going forward. But again, Tyler, thank you so much for joining me here tonight. It was a lovely conversation. I know we'll have you back. We had you on the Darkness Emergence stream, which was fun in its own right. Yeah. I'm sure we'll have you back for a repeat conversation and possibly a catch-up on how your stories are going in the future. But for After Dark, I'm Kent at Misha Kent on all social media, but that's not really important. What you should do, as my man Tyler said, is go follow St. Pete by Night on all social media. We have X, we have Instagram, we have TikTok, we have pretty much everything. And if you haven't caught up on all the episodes of Rage Across Tampa or Don't Get Caught or After Dark, those are available here on Twitch. They're also available over on YouTube. So go subscribe, give some views, give some comments on the videos over there. The algorithm absolutely loves that. And thank you guys so much for joining us tonight, and have a wonderful evening. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
This has been a St. Petersburg by Night production. After Dark is produced in agreement with the World of Darkness and Dark Pack. The host for After Dark is Kent. Visit our website at stpetebynight.com for more information about all of our productions and how you can become part of our community. Thank you for listening. Until next time, fangs, stakes, and claws out.